Gemara tells us, Maseches Megillah, Maseches Sanhedrin, the Shloshim Yom Kaidim Achag, Darshim Behilchos Achag, 30 days before Pesach, we already should start discussing some of the issues of Hilchos Pesach. So as part of our preparation for the Yom Tov of Pesach, I wanted to discuss, take the opportunity to discuss an issue that's Nogea, not only Pesach, but is relevant really the entire year, and that is the topic of Hechsher Kelim, of Kashering Kelim and Kashering different items in the kitchen. Now the truth of the matter is, we don't kasher from milchiks to fleishiks. Ashkenazim is quoted by the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Pesach, have a minig not to kasher back and forth from milchiks to fleishiks, because we might get confused, and one day the kli is milchiks, one day the silver is fleishiks, then your wife changes her mind, now it's milchiks again, then it's fleishiks again, we're going to forget what's the milchiks, what's the fleishiks. So because of that, we have a minig not to kasher back and forth from milchiks to fleishiks. But, of course, we do kasher kelim for Pesach, or if a person makes a mistake in the kitchen, once in a while you have to kasher the kli, or if you're going to a hotel, or taking a new apartment, and then there's a tray for kelim, you want to be able to use them. So many of the rules that we're going to discuss today will be the same. So all of the halachas of hechsher kelim come from the pasuk in Parshas Matos, which tells us that at the time of Klal Yisrael conquered the Bnei Midyan, they waged war with the Midyan, and they took their kelim. The pasuk says, "Achaz azov as a kesef zanachreshes habarzel habdil v'avfores." When you're dealing with these metal kelim, these are six different types of metals. Called davar shayava be'esh taviru be'esh v'taher. Anything that's used with the fire, you should put in the fire, and it will be cleansed. And skimming to the end of the pasuk, v'chol asher lo yava be'esh taviru b'mayim. Anything that was not in the fire should go cleansed or be kashered through the water. So Rashi writes, quoting from the Gemara Masechet Pesachim and Dafayin Dawid, that paraphrasing the Gemara says, "Kabol oy kach poltai." The same way it went in is the way it comes out. So Rashi writes, the same way the kli was used is the way you have to kasher the kli. Kederech tashmishoy hagolosoy. The way it was used is the way you are magilat. So Masha tashmishoy dechamin, says Rashi, if it was used with hot water, yagileno bechamin, you have to put it in boiling water. Umasha tashmishoy de tzli, if it was used with roasting, no medium of water, baking, roasting, all the same thing. If it was used without the water, medium of water, gonna shvud v'askala, like a roasting, like a spit. Yeah, so then yilabnenu ba'or. You need libun. These are the two primary forms of heksher: is hagala, putting it in boiling water, or libun, heating it, and we'll get to discuss some of the particulars in a few minutes. So kol davar shein tashmisha de'or, but let's say it's not used with fire at all. It's just used with coal. So then all you have to do is wash it out, and then it would be kosher. So now that is the general rule of hechsher kelim, is the way that is used is the way that you kasher the kli. If it was used with liquid medium, with liquid hagala. If it was used without liquid, then it's libun. And if it wasn't used with any heat at all, you could just wash out the kli. Now there's a big difference between this and tefilas kelim. Even though tefilas kelim, when you take a kli, you buy a kli from an achri, you have to tovel it in the mikvah. That's also learned out from this pasuk, where the pasuk says in the middle, ach b'menida yiskata, you have to put it into a mikvah. The same water, maim shanida tovelos b'hem. You have to put it into a mikvah. But tefilas kelim, the Yisuf HaHeter over here writes, one of the Rishonim, that often, Pesachim often appear in the pages of the Shulchan Aruch, so the Yisuf HaHeter writes that there's a difference between tefilas kelim and hechsher kelim. Tefilas kelim is a mitzvah. You make a bracha on tefilas kelim. Hechsher kelim is not a mitzvah. It's to prevent one from violating an iser of eating macholas asurais. Why? Because when the Midyanim cooked macholas asurais in their kelim, so there was, as we discussed a few weeks ago, there was particles of the food, flavor of the food, gets embedded within the kli. Then if you're later going to cook kosher food in that kli, those particles, that flavor is going to come out of the kli and go into your kosher food. And it's going to affect your kosher food. Now you'll say, well, in a minute, but we have a roiv. Whatever you have of the particles of the non-kosher food that are embedded in the kli that later emerge again, resurface in your kosher food, it's going to be batul b'roiv, and we have a general rule of acharei rabim lahatos that we follow roiv. However, we see from this entire discussion, the premise of the discussion over here in the Torah is that those food particles are not batul b'roiv, and that's why you have to kasher the kli. And this is one of the sources for the concept called tam ki ikar, that a flavor of a food is considered to be like the food itself, and as long as you can detect the flavor of the food, it's like you're eating the macholos asuras. So unless you have shishim in the food against the particles or the tam, the flavor of the food that's embedded within the kli, it would be a problem. Once you reach the shear of shishim, Chazal assumed you can no longer taste the macholos asuras anymore. But the problem is, we don't know how many times they cooked in this kli. So it could be the entire kli is saturated from the one side of the kli to the other with this flavor, macholos asuras. So therefore you need 60 times the volume of the kli in what you're cooking. And generally speaking, we don't have 60 times the volume of what you're cooking against the volume of the kli, unless it's a very thin, big, wide kli. You generally don't have that. So that's why the Torah demands that before a person used the kli, he has to kosher it. But that, again, is not a mitzvah. It's in order to prevent one from violating macholos asuros, so that the macholos asuros that were cooked in the kli should not come out and affect your kosher food. So right, therefore, rice is a heter. You don't have to kosher your kelim if you don't want to. You could just buy new ones. So on Pesach also, there's no mitzvah to kasher the kelim. If you want to use them, you can kasher them, but there's no mitzvah to do so. You can just take them and put them away. You don't even have to sell them to the non-Jew. There was, throughout the ages, different nuschos of the Mechiras Chametz to the non-Jew, where people sold the kelim to the non-Jew. The problem is, if you sell the kelim to the non-Jew, you have to tovel them when you take them back. So I think it says in the Maaser Rav of the Gra, the newer editions of the Maaser Rav, that's what he did. He sold his kelim every Pesach to the non-Jew, and he tovelled them all after Pesach. But no, in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says you should sell the blios of the kelim to the non-Jew. You sell the flavor embedded in the kli to the non-Jew. However, most of the Paiskim rejected both of these things. That we don't have to sell the kelim. There's no problem. There's no chametz that's tangible in the kelim. It's just a tam that's embedded within the kli. And you can't sell the tam to the nachri. In fact, that undermines the legitimacy of our whole sale. A nachri is coming now to buy from us tam food that, you know, that's embedded within the kli. I mean, you know, mechiras chametz, we try and do everything to make it seem as legitimate as possible. That seems to undermine the mechiras chametz. So many were opposed. Some sefer is a tshuva in the name of his rebbe Rav Nosson Adler discussing this issue. But most assumed that we do not have to sell the blios in the kelim. You just take the kelim, Shulchan Aruch says, and you put it away in a closet. Then you should seal the closet so as not to become confused with the kelim that are pesachdik and the kelim that are not pesachdik. But it's not because the kelim present any problem of Baal Yiro, Baal Yimot, Seyam Pesach. Okay, so you don't have to do this, but if a person wants to kosher his kelim for Pesach, so then the Torah tells us the way you have to do that is, it depends on the way it was used. If it was used with a medium of hot water, then you have to do kosher it in boiling water. If it was used without the medium of water, then you require limon. However, the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Avodah Zarah that this parasha of Hechsher Kelim and Parashas Matos is really only discussing a Kedera Bas Yoima within 24 hours of being used for Macholos Asuros. After 24 hours have passed, since it was used for Macholos Asuros, the Gemara assumes now it's called Noisin Tam Lefgam. It gives off a harmful, detrimental flavor to what you're cooking in the pot. The Gemara says over here, Lo Asur Teira Al Kedera Bas Yoima. The entire parasha of Hechsher Kelim is given for the first 24 hours, meaning the Midyanim were in the middle of cooking their treif beef stew, and then we found the kelim, and then we wanted to use it within 24 hours, then you got to kasher the kli. But if you wait till 24 hours have passed, midday raisa, you no longer have to kasher the kli, because what's the whole reason you have to kasher it in the first place is tam ki ikar, the tam, the flavor of the machos asuras is going to come out and affect the kosher food that you're cooking in it, and it's not bottled because you can still detect the flavor based on the principle of tam ki ikar. The tam, the flavor, is like the item itself as long as you can detect its flavor. But that does not apply if it's noisin tam lefgam. If it gives off a harmful flavor, the entire halacha of tam ki ikar does not apply. It's only if it gives over a positive flavor. So then why then do we have to have two sets of kelim, Rabbi said? Let's just have one set of kelim. We'll wait 24 hours between milchiks and fleishiks. And we'll just switch back and forth. Milchus Fleishiks. Just wait 24 hours. So in fact, one of the Rishonim, the Ra'ah, only had one set of Kalim. Switch back and forth, Milchus. Just waited 24 hours in between. However, the Gemara says that you shouldn't do that. The Ra'ah dealt with this Gemara. But the Gemara says you're not supposed to do that. Zera, Kedera She'ena Bas Yoyma, Mishum Kedera Bas Yoyma. We're afraid you're going to confuse the kelim that were within 24 hours of Macholos Asuros with those kelim that have not been used within 24 hours of Macholos Asuros. And because of this Yisim Midrabanan of Eino Ben Yomo, Otu Ben Yomoi, we don't do this. You're not allowed to use a kli, even though 24 hours have passed. Since it was used for machalas asuras, you're not supposed to use it. Gzeira, eino ben yomo, ata ben yomo, so too with milk and fleishiks. Someone just asked me right now, though, literally, actually, in the text, the last 10 minutes. We're not sure a pot, if it was milk and fleishiks, you have to kosher it. They don't remember milk and fleishiks. So the answer is no. Why not? Because what's the whole reason you have to kosher it now at this point? Milk and fleishiks? Ironic, they're just right now. What's the whole reason you have to kosher the pot, milk and fleishiks? Is it because ain't been after 24 hours have passed ain't been yomo ata ben yomo? So it's a suffix derabanan. So you don't know if it's milchik zaflashik. So who's suffix derabanan lekula? We don't know what the pot is. Okay, so suffix derabanan lekula, and go everyone. You can decide now what you want it to be. Lichatchila, we don't do that. We shouldn't create a suffix derabanan. If we know it was milchik, it should remain milchik. You know, it was fleishik, should remain fleishik, even though 24 hours have passed ain't ben yomo ata ben yomo. It's really only nisim derabanan. Yeah.
Also, if you accidentally use like a
so if, this is it solves most problems in the kitchen. There are two problems that solve the two issues solve most problems in the kitchen. The first is soap. Soap is the best thing that ever happened, not only for germs, but also because for kashrus. Because if soap is ever involved, it's always noisin tam of gam. Within 24 hours, not within 24 hours, soap is the great equalizer when it comes to kashrus. Because if a blia happened with soap, well, then it's noisin tam of gam. Soap doesn't taste good, and it overcomes, subdues all the other flavors. So for various issues, you don't have time to get into all the particulars, soap is a good thing. The other helpful issue with regards to kitchens is most of the times, so if you by accident cook milchiks in a fleishiks pot, or you take a spoon that's a fleishik spoon and you use it to stir a milchik pot, a milchik dish, as long as 24 hours have passed, it's not going to prohibit your food. You don't have to start with shishim against the spoon and all of these kinds of things. The problem that you do run into is, well, now what's the gender of the spoon? Is it milchiks or is it fleishiks? And now you'll have to kosher the... you might have to kosher the spoon.
Why don't you just wait 24 hours and then go back to fleishiks?
Ah, because it's not a suffix. There's no suffix. It was fleishiks. As a nice time of gamma fleishiks. Now it has a nice time of gamma milchiks. Well, what is this kli? Is it milchiks, fleishiks? You can't call it either one. So you can't use it for either one. You have to kasha the kli. So you have to kasha the kli, but it saves the dish. Okay, listen, we did a little bit. We saved the food. As it's important in the time, you'll kasha the kli afterwards. The food is allowed because it's nice in time of gam. Any time is batel b'roiv. I have a little bit of milchiks, but it's 24 hours old. I mix it into chicken soup. So it's batel b'roiv. The only time we say tam ki ikar is if it's not batel b'roiv. Yeah. As if it's nice and
how
much vach.
How do you measure like the whole surface of the spoon against the dish?
In theory, yeah, I have a big pot of chicken soup, so I look at the spoon and the volume of the spoon. If I have 60 spoons could fit inside my chicken soup, it's about to be right. So even if it was used within the last 24 hours, not a problem. Yeah, but then it becomes an issue. Oh, yeah, the spoon is easy. The other times you're not sure how much it was, and you're not sure how much soup there was, and then it gets tricky. Okay, how long do we call kedera eino bas yoima? You know, how long does the food particle stay inside of the kli? So there was a tshuva from the Chacham Tzvi. It's quoted in the Pisrei Tshuva in Yoredeya and Simen Kuf Chaf Aleph. Hechsher Kelim appears in Hilchos Pesach and Orchai, and it appears in Yoredeya, where most of Hilchos Kashrus is dealt with. So Pisrei Tshuva in Yoredeya quotes in the Chacham Tzvi that after 12 months, there's nothing left in the kli. We can't even call it eino ben yomo anymore. I mean, what's left there anymore? Any particles of flavor still left? Probably not. There's such a halach in yaya and stam yenom that after 24 hours, after 12 months, there's nothing left here anymore. It's not even a kneir shen bas yom. It's garnished. There's nothing left. So Chacham Tzvi wanted to be meikel with regards to machalas asuras as well. Chametz on Pesach, if it hasn't been used in 12 months, it's not even eino ben yomo. It's over. You start from new. Start from scratch. Rabbi Kiva Eger is quoted by the Pisrei Tshuva, as well as the Panami Irois, who was the grandfather of the Pisrei Tshuva. They all disagreed with this Chacham Tzvi, but as we'll see in a minute, it might be an important sniff lahakel, a tzad lahakel in Shilas, where there are other tzadim lahakel. So what should be the story then with regards to Pesach? It should have been the same story. So Reis HaShulchan Aruch, over here, Oiz Daud, Noisein Talmud Gam Mutter, Gam B'Pesach. So you have a kli shein of ben yomai that was used for chametz last year. We don't accept the Chacham Tzvi. You know, 12 months have passed, now it's gone. We start from scratch. No, hasn't been used since last year. Okay, but it's still ein ben yomo. Let's say you used it by accident on Pesach. I used the chametz stick of kli on Pesach by accident. What should be the story with the food? No problem. Why? Noisin tam of gam gives off a harmful flavor now. to old, and therefore should be batul b'roiv in whatever you're cooking. That's the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah disagrees. The Ramah says, no, you cannot be maker or noisin tam lufgam. An old flavor is noisin tam lufgam. We don't apply tam ki ikar. Cannot be maker with that on Pesach. You know why? Because why are we maker when it's noisin tam lufgam? Because of bitul beroiv. The flavor, the food particles that are embedded in the kli now come out in their bottle in the larger tavshil. However, that only works when something can be batel. Chametz, though, on Pesach, is b'mashahu, the Gemara says. Chametz is not batel, even in a large mixture, even less than shishim, chametz is not batel on Pesach. No. So since chametz is not batel on Pesach, so therefore, even noisin tam of gam won't help you. Noisin tam of gam only works because we don't apply tam ki ikar when it's noisin tam of gam. So we go back, we revert to the old rule of bitul b'roiv. Any food particles that come out are batel. But if chametz comes out on Pesach, it's not going to be batel. And therefore, even if you use an old kli, say no ben yomah, on Pesach you would have run into an issue. Yes?
What do you mean that this tam of
gam depends
upon batel?
How does noisin tam of gam work? Why is it that after the kli is 24 hours old, it's allowed? Why? Food particles are still coming out. So the Shulchan Aruch has one understanding of that, which we're not going to get into because it's not really relevant for us right now, that he assumes it still applies on Pesach. The Ramah understood the way that that works is, this is based on the Ra'ah, the way that that works is that tam ki ikar, the flavor, is like the item itself, and that you have to, anytime you can still taste it, it's a problem, that's why you need shishim, is only if it's a good flavor. If it's a bad flavor, there's no tam ki ikar, it has to stand on its own merits. So how much flavor is coming out of the kli already? How much flavor? Very little. I mean, I'm talking about an actual substance. Minimal. All there is flavor. You can taste it. So that's tam ki ikar. Flavor is important. Yes, when you apply tam ki ikar. But if all we're dealing with is a tam l'shvach, so now you have to deal with the particles in the absolute sense, in the tangible sense. How much particles are actually coming out of here? Very minimal, minuscule, microscopic. So it's batul b'roiv. We revert back to the old principles of batul b'roiv. Meaning tam should have always been batul b'roiv. Why don't we say all the particles are always batul b'roiv? I could use trefa kalim all the time. The answer is because it gives off a positive flavor. And we say tam ki ikar, and as long as you can taste it, it's a problem. Therefore, you have to worry about the entire volume of the kli. Maybe there's just so much tam that's coming in. But if it's tam u'shvach, we only worry about be'ed, I don't need shishim. All I have is roiv. Do you have roiv against the volume? Even if the entire volume of the pot would be saturated with this particles of flavor, they're going to come into your tavshil that you're cooking. You're going to have roiv against the pot. You're not going to have shishim against the pot, but you'll have roiv against the volume of the pot in most instances. So therefore we say, noisin tam of gam, it's batul b'roiv. But on Pesach, you can't say that because chametz is b'mashu, so even if a little drop of chametz comes out, we have a problem. So because of that, the Ramah writes, and this is the practice of Ashkenazim, the Ramah writes in Tafnun Beis Sif Aleph, again, the Shulchan Aruch disagrees with most of this, so if you're a Sephardi, we don't have any Sephardi here. So the Ramah writes that therefore you cannot kasher kelim on Pesach itself. You cannot do Hagolah. If you want a kasher kelim, you have to do it before Pesach. Why? Because the Rishonim will ask, how does Hagolah work? Rabbi, say again, you have your spoon. Spoon that was used to mix, milk of the spoon was used to mix chicken soup. Chicken soup is fine if the spoon was 24 hours old, but now we don't know what the spoon is. Milk, shleishik, you have to kasher it. Fine. So what are you going to do? You're going to put the spoon or a pot that's treif, you're going to put it into a bigger pot of boiling water. What's going to happen? The flavor goes out. Yeah, but you know, they don't take the flavor, doesn't take instructions from halacha. It's going to go out, it's going to go right back in. What's preventing it? Once you open up the floodgates, when things are boiling, all flavor is intermingling, so it's going to go out, but it's going to come right back in.
How do you wait 24 hours?
So therefore, every time in Haggadah, the Rishonim say, in order to solve that problem, what you have to do is, wait till the spoon is 24 hours old before you kosher it. Why? Now, even if the flavor goes out, it's noisin tam of gam, it's batel in all of the water of the pot that you're kashering in, it now cannot go back into the spoon, because if it goes back in, it's going to be noisin tam of gam. We don't apply tam ki ikar to noisin tam of gam. It's not going to go back into the spoon. That's why you have to wait till it's 24 hours old. Or what else could you do? If I have such a big kashering pot that's 60 times the volume of the spoon, I could even kosher it within 24 hours. Or I could do something else. You could put soap in the water. So when the time of the spoon goes out, it goes into soapy water, makes it artificially like it's 24 hours old. Now it doesn't go back into the spoon because it's nice in time of gam. We don't apply time kikar if it's nice in time of gam. So you have all these three options of hekshar kelim in general. Either you have 60 times the spoon, then you can even do it within 24 hours, or it's 24 hours old, or you could put a davar hapoygim, you could put soap into the water, and that solves the problem too. Where?
Bury it also?
No, burying is again. It's knives, it's all. Don't confuse it.
Wait, the 60 times, is that the water is 60 times?
Yes, because then whatever...
The stuff that's...
We don't know how much tarfus is in the spoon, so we have to assume that the entire thing is saturated with flavor of machol sasura, so you need 60 times the volume of the entire spoon. If we would know how much exactly is there, maybe you're right. But we don't, so therefore the Shulchan Aruch says generally as a rule, you need 60 times the volume of the spoon. So that's what you could do. But what happens, you can't do any of that on Pesach. Why? Because chametz is not bottled. This is all based on noisin tam of gam. Noisin tam of gam is telling us that if it's a bad flavor, it's bottled b'roiv. But the problem is, chametz is never bottled b'roiv. So the Ramah says you can never do Haggalah on Pesach. You have to do it before. Chametz before Pesach is bottled. On Pesach, chametz is b'mashu. So that's what the Ramah says. V'mohigo kaidim zman yisur yachol Haggalah ara Pesach. You do a Haggalah until Pesach. Then chametz is b'mashu, but when chametz once Pesach comes, you cannot do Haggalah because then chametz is b'mashu. Ve'enu mo Haggalah shechayzer b'leah is going to go right back into the kli. But mutar lelabein kli toich Pesach. You can do libun on Pesach. And you don't need to wait 24 hours by libun because libun doesn't work in this way. Libun, it burns the flavor where it is. You heat it up so hot that it burns whatever flavor is there. So it can burn it up. You don't need to wait 24 hours for nice in time of gam. You can even burn it, and you can even do this on Pesach. You forgot the kasher or burner on Pesach, no problem. You could kasher, you arrive at a hotel in the middle of Pesach, and there's a little burner in this room you want to use. You could kasher it even on Pesach, as long as you use libun, not Haggalah. Because there is this difference between libun and Haggalah, there's another distinction as well. And that is, with regards to Haggalah, you have to make sure that there is no tangible chametz there at all. If, again, this is all with the flavor that's imparted into the kli. You wait 24 hours, now it's nice in time of gam, and now it's batel b'roiv. That's assuming you don't have any tangible machalas asuras. If you've still got chaz v'shmalz on your kli, even after 24 hours, it's a problem. It doesn't become nice in time of gam after 24 hours. The flavor does, not the chaz v'shmalz be'en, if it's tangible. Or the same is true with regards to chametz. You can't have cracks and crevices that have little bits of chametz there. If you do, so then even if you wait till 24 hours, it's not going to be nice in tamal of gam. So then you will have a problem. You cook it in a big pot, the chametz is going to go right back into the kli. It's like you're cooking, unless you have 60 times the chametz, it's going to be a problem. So because of that, the Mishnah Berurah quotes over here, also based on the pasuk of Parshas Matos, the Siva Parshas Hagolah, it's Klei Midyan, Ach es hazav, only the gold, kloimar, rak es hazav. You can all, when you want to do hechsher kelim, you have to make sure there's no be'en there. If there's still tangible machalas asura is there, you can't do Haggalah. Dahanu kishayin sham chalula rak hazav. There's nothing else there except the gold. Then Haggalah works lahaf l'tabalua. Aval kishayin sham chalula yeshloch Hashem yesham mashu min hachametz v'chalula mechaseu v'ezel lo mahani Haggalah. The chametz itself is going to go right back into the kli, and there's no noise in tam of gam that you have. Unless there's 60 against the chametz again, but generally speaking, it's going to create problems. So in order to do Haggalah, you have to make sure that there's no tangible chametz there. However, that's only true with regards to Haggalah. With regards to Libun, you don't have to clean it out. Even if there's a chametz be'en, that's okay. So if you have a kli that you can't do Haggalah on because there's too many cracks and crevices, if you could do Libun on it, so that's going to burn up everything that's there, so then that can solve some of the issues. But because of that, even libun, you have to actually get rid of all of the bien, all of the tangible chametz. So for that reason, even, let's say, a barbecue, you can never get rid of everything that's there. There's always tons of gook and stuff, oils in the bottom, and none of that is, someone argued with me, nah, it's all butter, it's all charcoal. I don't think that's the case. I think you dig deep enough in the middle of a barbecue, you might find a piece of meat. You might find oils and things, especially if it's been used recently. You know. So I don't think you can kosher a barbecue simply by turning on the barbecue and heating it up, even if it gets to 600 or 700 degrees. The Paiskim say in order to kosher a barbecue, you need a blowtorch. If you take a blowtorch to your barbecue, you can say goodbye to your barbecue. It's not even if you have a fancy barbecue, it's not coming back from a blowtorch. So if you want a barbecue on Pesach, buy another barbecue. There's no buy a hibachi grill or something. There's no way to do this. But for this reason as well, something the Rama raises over here seems to be a tremendous chumrah. The Rama writes over here in Siman Tafnun Aleph of Sif Hey, what about stovetop grills, grates? Stovetop grates. You know, the thing where the pot sits on. So Rama writes, Chatsuva, over here, Siv Zayin, Tzarech Libun. That comes in direct contact with the fire, without the medium of water. Why? Because a piece of pasta could fall on it in the middle of the year, and it gets roasted right there in the stovetop grate. So therefore, you want a kosher to Pesach. What do you need? Libun. You can't just put in a pot of boiling hot water. You need Libun. So again, here the Mishnah Berurah says this seems to be a tremendous chumrah. Tremendous. For two reasons. The first is, we have a general rule in Hilchos Bas B'Chalav that Ein B'liya Yoytze Mikadera L'Kadera B'loy Roitev. Nothing transfers from one pot to another pot without a liquid medium. For example, I take a pot of Macholas Asuros, piping hot, boiling, and I put it down on my kosher countertop. Did I trafe up my countertop? No. Why not? Assuming everything is dry. Because blios don't go from a pot to another pot into the countertop without a liquid medium. If there's liquid there, it can go through the pot, through the liquid, into my countertop. But you need liquid there to be the conductor of blios to go from a pot into the countertop. Without liquid, nothing happens. How much liquid do you need? A good question. You probably need somewhat a substantial amount, but that's a big machlekes. But you need some liquid to be there. Here on this stovetop grate, there by definition cannot be any liquid there. You know why? Because it's a grate. It doesn't hold liquid. How can liquid be sitting there? So what is the Shulchan Aruch worried about? What am I going to do? Come and put down my Pesach thick pot on the top where the pasta was. So what? So what? There's no liquid here to transfer the flavor of the pasta from the grate into the pot. There's no liquid. For that reason, anybody here have separate Milchiks and Fleishik stovetop grates? No. No one ever heard of it. You know why? Nothing is transferring from the stovetop grate into the pot. There's no liquid medium. The other reason, says the Mishnah Berurah, that this is a tremendous Chumrah, is because what happened to the pasta the minute that it fell on top of the stovetop grate? It got burned alive. It's going to get Libun. It's literally sitting in the fire. So it got burned. And Libun gets rid of all Be'en. Libun gets rid of all tangible chametz, all tangible macholos asuros, like we said before. Even if it has cracks and crevices, the Libun burns everything. So it's going to, within reason, a barbecue not, but for the most part, it burns things up. An oven, if you put it on Libun, and we assume it gets rid of everything in the oven. So too over here, it's going to get rid of the chametz. The chametz got burned in its place. So says the Mishnah Berurah, V'zehu rak l'chadchil mishum chumr de chametz. Doesn't go unless you have liquid. And also, it's gone. That's the reason we don't have separate milchiks and fleishik grates. So for that reason, many paiskim assume that this whole chumrah of the Rama is only a chumrah de Pesach. And therefore, even though it does require libun, we're going to see there's two types of libun. There's libun chamor, libun kal. And whenever you need Libun l'chumrah, we can get away with Libun kal. So as long as you heat up the stovetop grates to a high enough temperature, we assume at that point, even though it's a chumrah de Pesach here, we should kasher the stovetop grates. We don't kasher them all year long. But it's a chumrah de Pesach, we should kasher the stovetop grates. But you don't need Libun chamor. It's enough with Libun kal, the weaker form of Libun, which we'll get to in a minute. And you can just, the way you go about doing it is either turning up the burner for like a half an hour or so, or if you want to do it more in a rush, you can put a blech on top. You turn each burner on one at a time for about 10 minutes. And the stovetop grate is kosher. You can't do all the burners at once, even just turning them all on. You'll kill your stove. You'll burn out the stove and cause a fire. You have to do one burner at a time. But you turn it up to the highest thing, either uncovered or covered, it goes faster until it gets hot, and then you could... someone told me they did it last year, the bleph melted. So it works. It works. Be careful. Don't leave it unattended. You know, and then it works like that. What about everything else? The little cap on top of the stove, the gas range, you don't have to do anything to that. That's mamish sitting in the fire. And the drip pan... So the same way, what we're afraid of, what might happen, is something might drip on it, so you pour hot water on top of it, and the minig is also to cover it with tinfoil. So everything else in the oven we cover, the stovetop grates akasha by turning on the top for about a little bit of time until it gets hot, and that's enough. If you have a Corningware, an electric stovetop, which gets literally red hot, you just turn it on. Once it's red hot, that's called libun, lilies libun kal, and that's good enough for kashering the stovetop. It's a tremendous chumrah, yeah.
Does it matter what the grates are made of? Some are real iron and some are like covered like a rubbery.
Some are wrought iron, some are enamel coated.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. No. The enamel coating, you have to make sure you don't ruin the oven, otherwise you'll ruin it. The Torah over here, though, only gives this parsha of Hechsher Kalim with regards to metals. Only metals, and only six types of metals, by the way. It's interesting. There are many more alloys now, but we generally assume that this applies to all metals. But is this limited to metal? So the Rishonim have a big dispute. What about stone, Kalim? You like granite, countertops. Stone. So it was a big machlek, so Rishonim, but Rav Rishonim assume, and it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch like that, the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, Rav Haigoin disagreed, but most assume that stone is considered to be like metal and it can be kasher. However, that's if you have solid stone. Akasha the same way as metal. That's if you have solid stone. But there are other types of countertops like quartz that doesn't come in big slabs like granite. That's it's a composite of smaller stones. And they use some sort of adherent to keep all of them together, which is probably an epoxy, some sort of plastic. So we'll get to whether or not you could kasha plastics in a minute. But that's related to the issue of plastic. So some kasher, so for example, the Star case says you cannot kasher composite countertops. But the CRC, the OU, I think would allow it. If you hold, you can kasher plastics for Pesach, you can kasher the composite countertops. If not, then you can't kasher the composite countertops. Same thing with the seam. Every countertop has a seam every once in a while. That's also a plastic. So that's like that. So if you have to cover over the seam with tape or not, you know, that also depends on this issue with the plastics, which we'll get to in a second. So but generally speaking, stone is the same as metal. What about earthenware? So the Pasuk tells us in Parashat Tzav, connection with cooking karbonos, u'kricheres asher tevusho bo yishaver. When you cook the karbonos, they didn't eat it raw. When you cook the karbonos, so you have to kasher the kli. Why? Rashi explains, because the flavor is going to become noisa. You're not allowed to leave any part of the carbon over past its expiration date. You know, whether it's 2 days, whether it's 1 day, you have to eat the carbon in a certain period of time. Not only that, you have to kasher the kli, otherwise the blios, the part that's embedded within the kli, will become noisa. So if it's a metal kli, you have to kasher it. If it's an earthenware kli, the pasuk says you have to break it. Why do you have to break it? Why can't you kasher it? So Rashi quotes in the name of the Gemara Masechtas Pesachim and Daf Lamed that it either Torah kli cheres she'ena yotz min de'dafin le'olam. It never comes completely out of the kli cheres. It must come out somewhat, Rabbi Sai. If it doesn't come out at all, then who cares if you use it? The problem is, no, it comes out, but it comes out in drips and drabs. And it will never come out the entire thing entirely. So that's why kli cheres, you have to break it. You cannot kasher it, and it's going to come out a little bit at a time. You have to break it. You have to get rid of it. You can't keep it. And to prevent it from coming nicer, you have to break it. No longer render it. No longer kli. So you have to break it.
One of the proofs of that surrounded by
a lot of broken kalim.
Yeah.
Wow. Archaeology major over here. All right. Very good. So, but 1 minute. Everybody said, if it comes out drips and drabs, what is there, an endless supply of machalas asuras in this earthenware kli? I mean, what, coming out drips and drabs forever? Forever? How long is that? How much is in there already? So the opinion of the Bala Iter was, what if I do Haggadah 3 times? I mean, I understand it's going to come out once. It's going to come out twice. It doesn't come out all the way. 3 times that it's going to come out. The fourth time is still coming out. How much is in there already? So Bala Iter said, if you kasher it 3 times in hot water, at that point there's nothing left. How could there be anything left? It's an interesting argument of the Bala Itam. We have it quoted by Shulchan Aruch, at least with regards to Yisurim Derabanan. Shulchan Aruch says, by Bisholakum, if a Nachri cooks something by accident in the kitchen, so we are Machmir, that you have to, not only the food prohibited by Bisholakum, you have to kasher the Kli. What if it's a Kli Cheres, an earthenware Kli? So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, over here in the second line, Imu Kli Cheres Magilo Shalosh Pamim. You do Haggadah three times with Dayoy. At that point, there's nothing left. So Shulchan Aruch says, we're only dealing with an Isa Midrabanan over here, Bisholakum. The Baal HaYitor wanted to apply this to all Isurim. So we don't accept that Baal HaYitor. That's too far. But Ramayisha has an important, notable tshuva. That's every tshuva for Ramayisha is notable, but there's a widely quoted tshuva. Where Ramayisha has a tshuva to Baal HaYitor who are in the process of doing tshuva. And one of the major hurdles is you have to get rid of all your kelim. If you have china, you have to get rid of it. It could be an expensive set of china. But you can't kosher the china. So it could be a great nisayon. So Ramosha said, if you put together these two kulas, the Baal HaYitor and the Chacham Tzvi that we mentioned before, if you wait 12 months, according to the Chacham Tzvi, after 12 months, it's not even Eino Ben Yomai. It's nothing anymore. Garnished. And you do Haggadah three times. You have the Baal HaYitor who said that that works by all Isurim. So Ramosha was willing to be maker for Baal HaTshuva only. This doesn't work if you want to go antiquing in the summertime and find fancy, china dishes and you want to kosher it. This doesn't work for you. It only works for those, for Balei Tshuva. Then Ramosha said, was willing to be maker with these two Tzadim Lekua. Rabbi Neuberger told me once that he was involved with a couple who was doing Tshuva, and they asked him this Shaila, and he passed it like Ramosha. They said, you can rely on Ramosha 12 months and do Haggadah three times. And they came back to him years later, and they told him that you should know that that was like a turning point in their lives. When they could keep the china, the wife saw that this is something that they're able to do. If she was going to have to get rid of her china, she wasn't sure if she was going to do it. But when they saw she could keep her china, she realized this is something she could undertake, and the lives now of Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs. Anyway, critical tshuva for Ramosha, but it should not be abused by those of us who don't need it. Yeah?
How do you do with the proper caution for these clear eyes? Do you blow the torch and you burn it?
You can't do anything.
I'm saying
put it in hot water.
Over these?
Yeah, hot water. Three times. Boiling water. Not hot, boiling water. What about glass? Glass is not dealt with at all by the Pasuk, either in Parshas Matos or in Parshas Tzav. What's the status of glass? So the Shulchan Aruch writes over here, Sif Tes, Big Machlekes over here, Ois Tes, Big Machlekes Arishayim, and Ois Yud. What should we do with glass? So Shulchan Aruch felt glass is so smooth, it doesn't accept any blios at all. Nothing gets embedded within the glass. Ein tzrichim shum hechsher she'einam boilim. That's the position of the Sfaradim. The glass you could use, milchix, fleishix, pesach, nothing happens, nothing wrong with the glass. However, the Ramah disagrees. It's the practice of the Ashkenazim. V'yesh machmirim v'oimim dekli zechuches afilu hagala lo mahani lehu. Over here is Yud, V'chein ha-minig ba-ashkenaz v'medina se'elu. The Ramah says, no, you cannot use glass kelim. Can't kasher them. Why not? So there's two opinions as to why not. You can explain it in two ways. The traditional understanding of the Ramah is, because how do you make glass? Everybody say, no one here is a chemist. How do you make glass? From sand! It's earthenware, mamish! It's earthenware! So Ramah held, you can't kasher it. It's like earthenware. That's one possibility. However, the Sharatzion quotes him a Chidushi HaRitva. That's the classical approach. Quotes him a Chidushi HaRitva in the name of the Ra'ah. Then no! It's because glass is like metal. You can kosher it. Goes in, comes out. What's the problem? Glass is not made for heat. So we're afraid it's going to break. And if you're afraid your thing is going to break, guess what you're not going to do? Haggadah properly. Because you're going to... You don't want it to break, so we don't trust you. You can do Haggadah properly. So that's why the Ramah said you can't do Haggadah on glass. What's the difference, Rabbi Isai? Whether the reason is because we treat it like earthenware, or we treat it like because we're afraid it's going to break because of the heat. What's the difference? The difference is Pyrex. What's Pyrex? Pyrex is tempered glass. It's made for the heat. So what should we say about the tempered glass? So Rabbi Vadia, which is always suspect over here, Rabbi Vadia is always trying to stack the deck. to help out the Sfaradim. So Rabbi Avadia writes, even the Ashkenazim should be mekel with Pyrex on Pesach. Why? The only reason there are more... The Sfaradim are mekel with glass anyway. But he's saying, even the Ashkenazim hold like us. Why? Because the only reason the machmer on glass is you're afraid it's going to break from the heat. Pyrex is made for the heat. There's nothing to be afraid of, so it's fine. You can kasha that. You can kasha it. Now, but the Maisa is, we don't do that. The practice by the Ashkenazim is not to kasha plaster glass for Pesach. We treat it like klicheres. What is interesting, though, is that in the only time the Ramah disagrees in Hilchos Pesach. Again, many of the halachas of Hechsher Kelim appear both in Hilchos Pesach as well as in Yerideah. And in Yerideah, the Shulchan Aruch reiterates his position that glass is shua v'loi bali, it's smooth, it doesn't accept bliyos. But the Ramah in Hilchos Hechsher Kelim doesn't disagree. He doesn't say, no, you can't kasha glass. It's only here in Hilchos Pesach he says you can't kasha glass. So because of that, the Knesset HaGdol, the Zera Emes, classical Achrayim, the Aruch HaShulchan felt that the whole year long we could be mekel on glass. We hold like the Shulchan Aruch, it's shua v'loi bali. You could use the same set of Pyrex for milk and fleishiks, like the Sfaradim. The only time we're machmer is a chumr de Pesach. That is not the practice by most. Drinking glasses are all cold, and a separate issue. We're talking about stuff that's used for hot. Most people in their homes, in kosher homes, do not have one set of Pyrex for milk and fleishiks. Just by Ashkenazim, and you cannot be made like that. The minig is not like that. But that was the opinion of some Paiskim, that this perhaps is only a chumah de Pesach. Okay, so we dealt with glass. What about plastic? Plastic didn't exist in the times of the Torah. Obviously, it's not dealt with by the Paiskim Parshas Matos, not dealt with in Parshas Tzav. What is plastic? So Rav Moshe writes in the Igros Moshe, look, we don't know what plastic is either. It's like the glass. We don't know what it is. So how to deal with it? So Rav Moshe says we have to treat it like klicheres. You cannot kasha plastic. However, other paiskim, I would say the larger majority of paiskim disagreed with Rav Moshe. The Rav Chalkis Yaakov, the Sri Deish, the Sitz Eliezer. Other paiskim disagreed with Rav Moshe, and they said we should treat plastic like metal. We know it accepts blios. It's porous. You could see it by the fact that it changes color based on what you cook in it. If you cook in it something that's yellow, it becomes yellow, you know. So it becomes tinged. Clearly it accepts blios, but it can come out too like metal. And that is become, so the whole year long, generally speaking, people were makel to kasher plastic. Talmidim of Rav Moshe didn't, but people were generally speaking makel to kasher plastic. But traditionally, on Pesach, nobody kasher plastic. That was the way I was brought up. You didn't kasher plastic on Pesach. But in the more recent years, I'd say in the last 10 years, 15 years, now people are starting to kasher plastic for Pesach. And the OU, the CRC, believe you can kasher plastic for Pesach. Star K still says no. So the big difference is, let's say microwaves. Microwaves, the inside is all plastic. So the glass tray in the microwave, you can't kasher. Glass, we don't kasher glass. What about all year long? You want to kasher a microwave? You move into an apartment and there's a microwave, you want to kasher the microwave? So that gets involved in the discussion of glass the whole year long. Do we treat it like we make or we machmir? Do we treat it like klicheres the whole year long, only on Pesach? But certainly on Pesach, there's no room to wiggle. The glass, even if it's tempered glass, we're not make or to kasher the glass when it comes to Pesach. So the glass, you can't kasher. The microwave, you can kasher. You put in a cup of water and it steams up and kashers the whole microwave. And then you have to worry about the place where the cup was. So you have to put in a second cup and fill up the microwave with steam again to get the spot underneath where the first cup was. You understand? You put one cup, you move the cup over. But can you kasher plastic for Pesach? So the Star case says, no, you can't kasher a microwave oven, it's plastic. But the OU, the CRC, are makel to kasher plastic for Pesach now, so you can kasher that. Or that will be the difference with the epoxy in the middle of the granite countertops. Or if you're dealing with a composite countertop that's made from joining different pieces of stone together, can you kasher that? It's not one solid piece of stone. All that is plastic. Or for mica countertops. We'll get to countertops right now in a second. But can you kasher for mica countertops? For mica, it's all plastic. So if it's ridged, you can't kasher it because you have cracks and crevices where there could be real chametz. But if it's smooth, so traditionally nobody ever kashered for mica countertops. But now if we're going to kasher plastic, what's the difference between for mica countertops and other plastic things? So if you're going to kasher a microwave, you can kasher for mica countertops for Pesach too. But again, the general rule is, let's go back to the Pesach and Parshas Matos. The way it was used, the way that it comes out. So we have two primary forms of hesher. We have libun. If it was used directly with a fire, then you need libun. What is libun? So look over here, ois zayin. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, simetof nun alef sif hey, kelim shemishtam shemhem aridei ha'ur, with directly with fire, go and shvulim v'askal tzcha yoytzimem tzrichan libun. What is libun? Hu achi yunitzoytzis nitzim mehem. Sparks need to be flying, everybody says, sparks. So Moshe said, you need a blowtorch. A blowtorch on each, not a blowtorch, you run it over. A blowtorch on each spot for 7 to 8 seconds. You do that, Rabbi, you have no kli at the end. It's over. It's done with. No more. No more oven. If you do that with your oven, you have no more oven to speak of. So libun gamor is very difficult to accomplish. Nowadays, we'll get to ovens in a second, but self-cleaning ovens, Paiskim assume that's hot enough to be called libun gamor, even though there's no sparks flying. It reaches 700, 800 degrees, which is the same temperature as a blowtorch. That itself was a big dispute when this first issue first became discussed by the Paiskim. This is dry heat as opposed to fire that's on it. But the Paiskim now have accepted it pretty much across the board that self-cleaning ovens is considered to be libun gamor. However, the Ramah quotes a dissenting opinion that you don't need tzoytzis nitzim, v'yesh makilim, im nislabin kol kach shekash nisref alav. If a piece of straw could catch fire, that's called libun, which is around, the Paiskim assume, around 400 to 500 degrees. That's much easier to accomplish. That can be done. So if it's used directly in contact with the fire, you can rely on... Usually speaking, we need libun chamor, but if you're using libun as a chumrah, like the stovetop grates, or if it's a kli that really needs hagogah, but has cracks and crevices, you want to do libun, you put it in the oven at 400, 500 degrees, that serves in the place of hagogah. You can rely on this second opinion of what libun is, which is kash nisraf. The Ramah says the minhag generally is, when you really need libun, you need nitzoytzis nitzim, and oigin kesvar rishon b'chol davar shedino b'libun, aval davar shedino b'hagogah really requires hagogah, rak, sheyesh bo stokim. We only need libun as a chumro, or it has cracks and crevices, it can be enough with libun kal. So that's why the stovetop grates is enough with libun kal. What if it was used, though, in contact with the water? So then we said, it's enough with hagala. You put it in boiling water. What if it wasn't used directly with boiling water? I poured water on it. Something spilled on it. So the Shulchan Aruch says, however it was used is the way that it comes out. Look at the Shulchan Aruch over here. However, it was used the way that you kasher it. Im tashmishu b'kli rishin, kli rishin is the pot that's directly on the fire. Then you need kasher it with kli rishin. So if you have a ladle, how do you kasher it? You sometimes stir a pot that's on the fire. You kasher it with in a pot that's on the fire. Tzarech lashir b'kli rishin, or a pot that was on the fire. If it was used with a klisheni, meaning I took it out from the pot and I put it in a bowl, how do you kasher the bowl? Assuming it's not china, which you can't kasher. How do you kasher the bowl? Klisheni. You could put it in a second pot of water. Certainly you could go more of the chumrah. You could put it in a pot that's on the stovetop in a klishen, but a minimal, a klisheni. And if it was through pouring, hot water poured on it, klisha tashmishai, boy be iroi, shemar mi klishen, Sagile, you can pour from a klirishin. So therefore, how do you have to kasher countertops? How should you have to kasher countertops? Says in the Shulchan Aruch, how do you kasher countertops for Pesach? You pour on it. What are you concerned with on the countertop? Anybody cook on the countertop? Nobody cooks on the countertop. There's no heating element in it. If there is, it's called a stove. And if it's just a countertop, you're afraid something spilled on it. No, how do you kasher it? Pour from a klirishin on top of the countertop. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says, though, the Mishnah Brura adds, in Hilchos Pesach, but 1 minute, you have to be afraid that you took a hot piece of chametz and put it down directly on the countertop. Solid piece of chametz. And there is a chumrah from the Marshal. It's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. A chumrah from the Marshal called Dover Gush. Nothing to do with Yeshivas Haratzion, but a Dover Gush. What is the problem with the Dover Gush? Dover Gush is, the Marshal claims, that the only time we distinguish between a kli rishon and a kli sheni is when it takes the contours of the kli that you put it in. You put liquid in the pot, it takes the contours of the pot, so the walls of the pot affect the liquid. If you have a davar gush, a solid food item, this applies in Ochel Shabbos too, it comes up, we have to assume it's always in a kli rishon, because it doesn't take on the contours of the pot. So if you take a hot piece of chametz and put it down in your countertop, the Mishnah Berurah wants to be machmir to treat that like a kli rishon. So how do you counteract that? How do you kosher it? You have to take an Evan Meluban, a piping hot red brick, and rub it along the countertop as you're pouring your hot water on the countertop. That's the way that Mishnah Berurah says to kosher countertops. You'll say, where am I going to get an Evan Meluban? There used to be people that said bricks in the olden time. Bricks on top of the cellar. Take it with tongs and you put it on. Now they sell an Eichlers, I believe, a plugged-in Evan Meluban. You can plug it in. But Lamaisa is, the Paiskim, generally speaking, do not accept this Chumra of the Mishnah Berurah. Some will do this. Remember the grandfather's doing this. I know people remember the grandfather, parents doing this. It's not the practice, not recommended by any kosher organization on there, or at least the instructions for countertops. Why? Because it's a Chumra of the Marshal. The Ramadja doesn't accept this. It's not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Even though the Magen Avraham, the Mishnah Berurah accepts it, and the Shach and the Taz accept it, we treat this as a Chumra. And the whole chashash of countertops itself is a chumrah. What are you really afraid of in the end of the day? You're going to put, hey, Kedera, believe you, what are you afraid of? You're going to put a hot piece of matzah down on top of the countertop in the exact same place where there was a hot piece of chumrah, and then you're going to eat it while it's wet? So to be chashash for a davar gush here as well is really a chumrah. Agabi chumrah, and as we'll see, it's even a chumrah, agabi chumrah, agabi chumrah. It's three chumrahs, so that far we don't go. It's enough if you pour water on the countertops. But you have to be careful if you do this. That it go, if you have a granite countertop or your kashering plastic, like formica, that it hits directly on each point on the countertop. You can't just spill, if your countertops are built properly, they tilt towards the floor. So if liquid spills on it, it should run to the floor. Like the streets, the water runs to the side. Countertops are supposed to be tilted down. So you could just pour at the back lip of the countertop and it'll run down the front. That's not good enough. It has to hit directly on each part of the countertop. You know, there's a certain circumference as you pour on it. That's called hitting the countertop, but it can't run down the countertop. So you have to hit directly, you know, as a drop hits, there's a certain circumference that it, you know what I'm talking about? When you pour it. So that's called directly, otherwise it's not good enough. It has to hit directly each part of the countertop. It's a very messy business. You do this very messy. You have water all over the place. You run out of boiling water very quickly. You have to keep going back. You need one of those plug-in urns, the Chinex. You have to keep going back. And it's an ordeal. What about through steam? Can you kosher it through steam? So Ramesha was not into koshering with steam at all. He said, we never find steam. Vu steam? Where's steam in the Shulchan Aruch? You can't kosher with steam. We have two things, Libun or Hagala. We don't find steam. But then Rabbi, the Paiskim generally assume, though, the other Paiskim argue that if it went in with steam, it could come out through steam. So as we said, a microwave oven, you could kosher with steam. The only way it went in was because steam went up and it, you know, took up all the space in the microwave. So it went in with steam, come out through steam. What about koshering a countertop with steam? So Rabbi said, no, you can't do that. It went in by pouring chametz poured on it. So how do you have to kosher it? You have to kosher it with pouring hot water on it. But Ramosha does say if you have a steamer where water gathers there, not that it's just steam, water gathers there, that's 212, it's boiling, then you can kosher it. That's called boiling water. That's good enough. What do I care if it came from a steamer or it came from a pot? So you can kosher with steam. This is a very hot, talked about issue within, you have no idea, the steamers. Steam is an issue. You cannot use a steamer, though, that you buy in the Sharper Image to steam your clothing, your suit after you travel. That's a garnish. You have to buy an industrial steamer that's made for this purpose. That you can use in a countertop. But once again, you have to sit there till water gathers on each part. You can't just blow steam all over the place on the countertop and say, oh, they're done. 30 seconds, no problem. Anybody told you they kosher the countertop in 30 seconds doesn't know how to kosher countertops. You have to sit there like this. I mean, mamish, till the water gathers. It's a involved ordeal. But let's say you have a kli that's used in two different ways. Sometimes it's used for cold. Sometimes it's used for hot. Sometimes it's used on the fire. Sometimes it's used with a liquid medium. How do I determine the proper way of koshering the kli? Says the last issue, Rabbi. Look over here. The Shulchan Aruch says that you go based on roiv. Kol kli hochen boy achar roiv tashmishai. So let's say you have a kli that's used primarily for cold. Once in a long while, I used it for hot. No koshering necessary. Wash it out, good to go. You go based on Rav. Or you use it once, you know, usually with a liquid medium. Once in a while, I roast on it. But once in a while, you could do Haggadah. You don't need Libun. The Rama says, well, nothing doing. The Rama disagrees. V'yesh machmir, no. V'chol davar sheyesh loch u'shem nishtamish v'bekli rishon. You have to go to whatever the most chomer dika type of hechsher that that requires. The Rama says you have to do it, go according to the miut. Follow miut hashmishon. But this is a chumra. The Shulchan Aruch is meikol. The Rama is machmir. The Rama even is meikol b'di'evin. So clearly this is a chumra from the Rama. So the Rama doesn't put this chumra together with another chumra. This is the issue with drinking glasses on Pesach. A very talked about issue as well. Drinking glasses are generally used for cold. But the Rama says you have to be afraid. Once in a while, you might use it for hot. Klisheni, certainly. You might use it for hot. You might pour in something that's hot. So then, if you're chayshish for miyot tashmish, once in a while, you use it for hot, you have to kosh your glasses. So the Rama said, the Mishnah Berurah says that we don't put these two chumras together. Most of the time it's used for cold. And the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch was glass doesn't need hechsher. And the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch was that we follow Rav Tashmish. So even though the Rama is machmir on both of those issues, we don't put the two chumras together. So glasses, drinking glasses, you don't have to kosher with Haggadah, even though once in a while you might use it for hot, because you have glass itself as a chumra. We're machmir, Ashkenazim are machmir, but it's a chumra. We're chayshish miyotash, but that's also a chumra. To put the two chumras together, we don't necessarily do. That's why some people soak their glasses for 3 days in a pot, a tub of water. Maybe you've seen that. They soak it for 3 days, and that's enough. You don't have to kosher it in hot water. We don't put the two chumras together. They do milui ve'ira gimel yamim. You switch it in a bathtub. You switch it every day. You switch the water for 3 days. You might have seen this once in a while. The Mishnah Berurah says, this is only if you've seen this by grandparents who came from Europe. They used to do this in Europe. The Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't do this. If you could afford drinking glasses, you live in a place where you could afford a second set of drinking glasses, he says buy a second set of drinking glasses for Pesach. But the Ramah said, but the Mishnah Berurah does quote this this kula. But that's another reason why the countertops, we certainly don't have to be afraid that once in a while you put down hot chametz there, because what is the rive of the tashmish of the countertops? For cold. So since rive is for cold, yes, it's true, we're machmir once in a while, this maybe happened, the Ramah says we should be machmir for it, but lemaiz is most of the time it's used for cold, so why we don't really have to be machmir that far. So then, with your Evan Meluban, you know, that's why it's too far, the Evan Meluban. We don't have to be machmir that far. Rabbi said, one last thing that we need to understand is how could the Shulchan Aruch say you go based on Rav? Once in a while you used it for hot. How could it be? You don't need to kasher it if most of the time it's used for cold. So the Stipler explains that the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is that when this rule of the way that it's used is the way that you kasher it, is just to determine what kind of hechsher you need. But we don't get involved in the particulars of every type of, you know, exactly how it went in is the way that it comes out. We're just determining which box should we put it in, Haggadah, Libun, which box should we put it in, but we don't get involved in exactly how it went in and how it came out. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch says, if right at the time it's used for cold, it goes in the washing out box. All you have to do is wash it out, that's good enough, you don't need Haggadah. We go based on Rav to determine which box you put it in. We don't care the particulars of the way it went in, the way it came out. And the Rama says, no, if once you used it for hot, we don't just put it in a box. If that's the way it went in, that's the you have to take it out in that way. It's not just to determine which form of hechsher you need it. The way it went in is the way that it comes out. So, Lamashal, this comes up in the following situation. What about if you boiled water, or you boiled something in a pot at 170, you didn't boil it, I'm sorry. It went up to 170, but never got to 212. You'll say, who does that? Who cooks stuff only to 170? People who make chocolate. Chocolate, if you cook it too hot, ruins the equipment. You can't cook it above 170, 180, it ruins the equipment. If you cook it to 212, it ruins it. So can you kosher it at 170, 180? Or do you have to kosher it at 212? Is the only way of koshering 212? Or can you do Haggadah at less? If that's the way it went, that's the way it came out. This is a big machlek, so paiskim, two opinions in the Dark Yeshuva, super commentary on the Yeridah. Classic, right? Machlekes. So the Stipler links the two issues together. If you hold like the Shulchan Aruch, there's boxes. We're just determining which box to put you in. So if it's used with hot, you go in the Haggadah box. The only way of Haggadah is 212. You can't do anything less. But according to the Ramah, the way it went in is the way it came out. The Mil Tashmish. So then maybe if it went in at 170, it could come out at 170. This is the issue with all of our ovens. Why? If you have a self-cleaning oven, you kosher the oven self-cleaning, good, shalom al Yisrael, it's a new thing. But if you live in Washington Heights, Rabbi Yisrael, you do not have a self-cleaning oven. I could almost guarantee it. you have a self-cleaning oven. How do you kash your oven for Pesach? Liban needs real Liban. Liban is nitzertz is nitzin. Don't get out your blowtorch, please. Don't blame it on me if you do. So how do you kash it? So Moshe said, you need Liban chamer, nitzertz is nitzin. Either a blowtorch or an oven box. Good luck finding an oven box. But it's a box that went into the oven that you put surround, you know, cooking all your food in a box. That was Ramesh's opinion. However, Rabbi Aaron Cutler disagreed. This is the opinion of Salvechik too. Rabbi Aaron Cutler is quoted by Rabbi Eider in his Sefer and Hilchos Pesach as disagreeing that no, whatever temperature went in at, it comes out at. Nobody cooks in their oven at 700 degrees. The highest ovens go are 450, 500. So you take your oven, you put it up to the highest madrega that it goes, and you leave it like that for an hour. Kibbol or kachpoto, the same way it went in, is the same way it came out. But Ramesh is going with the svara that no, there's only one form of libun. There's no other form of libun. Libun is nitzaitz nitzin. That's it. And the Rabbi Kala seems to be following this other way of thinking. He said, no, the way it went in is the way it came out. It's not different boxes. Like the Ramah said, if it went in Mio Tashmish was once with Chamin, was once like they were, we have to be afraid for that. The way it goes in is the way it comes out. The particulars of how it went in is how it has to come out. And this is the issue in everybody's kitchens with warming drawers. Can you kasher a warming drawer? It needs Libun. Where's it? It needs Libun. Nobody has a self-cleaning warming drawer, to the best of my knowledge. There's no such thing yet. So how is your mother at home going to kasher a warming drawer? So the Star K says he cannot kasher a warming drawer. But that's because they are following Rav Moshe. You need an oven box. You can't kasher an oven at 400 degrees or 500 degrees. You put it up to the highest. They assume they only need Libun is with an oven box or Libun Gomor. However, according to Byron Cutler, that the same way it went in is the way it came out. You put up the warming drawer to the highest madrega, and you leave it like that for an hour, and then the same way it went in is the same way it comes out. Okay.